Welcome to PR360, where every week the brightest minds in public relations, communications, and media discuss the topics and trends you need to know about. PR360 was produced in partnership with Global Results Communications. Now here's your host, Todd Perry.
Welcome back to PR360. My guest today is Peter Friedman, the founder of Think Inc., a creative PR and guerrilla marketing agency based in London, but for the past 18 years has worked for startups and scale-ups in the US and UK simultaneously. Think Inc. has earned a lot of attention for its quirky ideas that spread virally, often around the world. Peter is also the author of a new book about the work he did for Calm, the meditation, sleep, and mental health app. It's called How Calm Whipped Up a Storm, How One Small App Won a Ton of PR and Buzz That Helped It Grow Big, and How You Can Too. Michael Acton Smith, the co-founder of Calm, calls Peter, quote, a PR genius who has dreamed up endless stories for Calm. I've worked with many PR folks in my career, but Peter is by far the best and most creative. So with that, Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So, before we get into talking about your new book, you sent over a bio, and I have to admit, it read to me a little bit like the writer for like a Van Halen concert in the 80s, where there was I thought that there was some jokes in there just to weed out whether the person interviewing you was actually paying attention. But then, as a good journalist, I looked through it and I realized that it was all true. So, really quickly, there's just some really quirky stuff that you've worked on. You were the editor of the Testicle Cookbook, Cooking with Balls. You helped create an 8-hour slow-motion film about sheep. You're the author of the world's first job ad for a specialist emoji translator. You wrote a book about Socceranto, the birth of a language, how to create a new international language off of soccer, and proudly wrote Glad to Be Gray, a celebration of dullness. So, again, I saw this and I thought, wait, this seems like a John Cleese bit. And then I looked into it and I said, it's all true. Where do you get this sense of irreverence?
The honest answer is I don't know. I guess that's a version of the old nature versus nurture question. But I know when I was a child, I used to read a lot of joke books, and I used to listen to recordings of comedians often over and over again. And I think that is part of it. And I would say that's good training for what I do, because a lot of guerrilla marketing and a lot of stunts, maybe even most stunts, are essentially jokes. They use the same techniques and have the same intellectual structure as jokes. And the essence of what I do is trying to make people smile or laugh or be amused enough that they'll want to share, enjoy the content we're creating, enjoy the ideas, and share them with other people.
And it seems to me that also in there is a love of language, right?
Yes. Yeah. Language is very important. Yes, definitely. Yeah. In my book that you mentioned called How Calm Whipped Up a Storm, I outline 10 golden rules, what I call 10 golden rules of PR and guerrilla marketing. And one of the rules is about language, and it's about names, because some of the ideas I illustrate were about creating fun and unusual names for things. Like what one idea for Calm, which was not one of the kind of quirkier, wilder ideas, but we created a list of, yeah, well, one of the big focuses of Calm is sleep, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so we were always trying to create ideas and content around sleep. And one idea we came up with was how to come up with ideas during your sleep. So kind of tips and techniques to increase creativity during sleep. And we coined the term sleep storming. And we said sleep storming is the new brainstorming. And some of the tips were kind of slightly risk being on the kind of banal and obvious side, like keeping a notebook beside your bed and everything. But because we created a new name, a new term for it, sleep storming, we really got a lot of attention and coverage, because if you create a new name, it's as if you've created something new altogether. And something new, as long as it's interesting enough, can then become news and newsworthy. Yeah. And like also, Calm had one of the big content strands of Calm are what are known as sleep stories, which are bedtime stories for grown-ups. And one of the star writers of sleep stories is a woman called Phoebe Smith, who's written many of the most popular sleep stories. And we worked with her, and we billed her as Calm's and the world's first sleep storyteller in residence. Yeah. And just by coming up with that new kind of fun new job title, we then created a new thing, and that made it official. And then people were then keen to interview and write about her as the first ever sleep storyteller in residence. So yeah, language is very important.
It seems like around the brand of Calm, you did an incredible amount of world building. You know, it's not just the app. This is almost a lifestyle or a way of being, you know?
Yes, I think so. Well, when I started working with Calm, the Calm's empire consisted of 9 people in a 1-bedroom apartment in San Francisco. And when they had important calls, they would rush out into the stairwell to take them. And if they had big meetings, they would go to the lobby of the hotel across the road. But even then, I never checked this figure, but somebody told me, even then there were 2,000 meditation apps, of which Calm was one. And I read the figure a few years later, there were 5,000 meditation apps. So the competition is intense and enormous, and it feels like almost infinite. So you need to find a way to stand out. And one of the ways Calm stood out was, as you say, creating worlds and taking a more irreverent, lighthearted, kind of playful approach where everyone else was being kind of grown up and serious. Calm did the grown up and serious stuff well, but it was also willing to be more playful and irreverent and, as you say, create new worlds.
Now, why do you think that tone matched perfectly with the product? My thought would be, something that's meditation seems very serious, and it seems like maybe something I don't want to engage with because maybe it's too serious or potentially difficult for me to do. But if it seems fun and irreverent, then I'll be more interested in trying meditation. Is that the thought behind it, or am I way off?
Yes, you're completely right, or anyway, I completely agree with you. I think meditation, when I started working with Calm, it was just a meditation app, and then it evolved to become a meditation and sleep app. But the thing about meditation is much loved by people who love meditation, mm-hmm. but that was only a relatively small minority of people. And many other people think it's kind of threatening, and it's something for kind of weirds and beards and people in sandals and eating very tasteless vegan food as something very woo-woo. So in order to help almost detoxify meditation and to help bring it into the mainstream, I think a good approach was to have a sense of humor. And also Calm is a meditation and sleep app, but it's also a mental health brand. And Calm, like many other mental health brands, a big ambition is to destigmatize mental health problems. And I think a good way to destigmatize both meditation for those who are put off by it and mental health is to be a bit more playful and show a sense of humor around it and not to always be serious and reverent and speak in low tones about it.
So. Well, it's funny. You're preaching to the choir here, because one of my other projects is a podcast called What's This Tao All About? And it's basically about the Eastern philosophy of Taoism. And it was me interviewing a Taoist priest who's also a psychologist who talks about this, but completely in very funny, joking terms and everything. And so a lot of people resonated with because it wasn't stuffy.
Yeah, it makes it more accessible, I think, for those who are frightened by meditation or Taoism. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what piece of, I guess, quirky PR are you most proud of that you did for Calm?
Well, depending how much time we have, I can give you a few different examples. But one of the biggest home runs we did for Calm is when Calm was pivoting away from being a meditation app to a meditation and sleep app. The big new focus was on sleep. And so we started with the premise that insomnia is a modern epidemic. So we asked the question, what would be the ultimate cure for insomnia? And the answer we came up with was an 8-hour slow motion movie about sheep standing in a field doing nothing. And so that's what we produced. And we called it Baba Land, as in La La Land. And we created a poster, which was an affectionate pastiche of the La La Land poster. And instead of Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, we had two very good-looking, sexy sheep canoodling on the poster. And we built it on the poster. We said, the dullest movie ever made, question mark. You know, we think so, and we hope you do too. And then we released an 85-second trailer for the movie and the poster. And then that went kind of viral worldwide, everywhere from Vietnam to Kazakhstan to Bulgaria, and in Poland, in the Polish edition of the TV game show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, the $1 million question, or the million zloty question, was viewers of the movie Baba Land had to spend 8 hours doing what? And that was so successful that 3 or 4 months later, we came back for a second swing at bat, and we staged the red carpet world premiere of Baba Land in a movie theater in central London. And we had sheep in tuxedos and evening gowns walking down the red carpet and planting their hoof prints in cement, or actually in trays of mud. And we had all the cinema goers, all the people attending, were attending in pajamas and kind of bathrobes and dressing gowns. And I don't know how many of them actually sat through the entire movie, but some of them got a good chunk of the way through.
So you played the entire 8-hour movie?
We played the entire 8-hour movie as a prestigious West End Central London cinema. And yeah, so we got a load of global coverage and buzz for that. Yeah, we had the Associated Press, AP, sent a TV crew, and Reuters sent a TV crew. And we had Sky Television. So we had lots of global TV that time. And it just, Baba Land, even now, several years later, never stops getting coverage. It sort of entered the bloodstream of the internet, and it keeps surfacing. Another story we did is when the GDPR legislation came out, the EU's new privacy legislation. Originally, I'm based in the UK, although I work mainly for brands in the US, and I do that by partnering with colleagues on the ground in the US. But I didn't realize initially that US businesses were as worried about GDPR legislation as European businesses. And the reason they were is because any business with EU citizens on its database had to comply with EU legislation. And if they didn't, they'd get large fines and penalties. So yeah. when there was increasing fever and interest around the approach of the GDPR legislation, the introduction of it. So, and this is a time when Calm had a big focus on marketing and promoting their sleep stories, bedtime stories. So we created a bedtime story called Once Upon a GDPR, which was a very long and tedious extract from the 538-page legislation. And we had a man, a longtime BBC announcer who used to read, who was known for his dull and relaxing tones, to read this seriously. And actually, another story we did just for Calm, I still work intermittently for Calm, not as much as I used to, but we did a story just this past December, 3 or 4 months ago, where we used the latest We got the permission of the estate of James Stewart, Jimmy Stewart, the star of It's a Wonderful Life, the most beloved Christmas movie of all time. And we got the permission of his estate and his family to clone his voice. And we created a bedtime story in the spirit of It's a Wonderful Life, but also different, called It's a Wonderful Sleep Story. Mm. Kind of modernized, again, a loose tribute to it, but some distance. And also another story we did, this was long time before ChatGPT and its rivals, when AI was still kind of, you know, generating stuff by AI was still a long way off. But we created the first bedtime story written by AI. And we did that by collaborating with a collective of programmers and writers in the US called Botnik. And they had developed, I guess it was a very early primitive version of ChatGPT. It was a predictive text algorithm. And we got them to feed in the complete works of the Brothers Grimm, probably the most famous compilers of bedtime stories and folk tales. And we churned out what we called, the first bedtime story written by AI and the first new Brothers Grimm story in over 200 years. And we billed it as the Lost Grimm fairy tale. It was actually called The Princess and the Fox. And it was written in the style and the language and the general vibe of a Brothers Grimm story, but it was a completely new story.
Was it violent? I know there's a...
Yeah, it was. We tried to tone down the violence. Yeah, it was done. It was mainly generated by AI, but at that stage there was a bit of human editing. And we didn't... I know, some of the Brothers Grimm stories are, to coin a phrase, pretty grim and can get pretty violent. So we tried to tone that down with some human editing. Yeah, we didn't want it to get too violent or brutal, because that's not good for soothing you to sleep.
So, looking back at your career and some of the things that you've done, it seems to me that you've done a lot of guerrilla marketing, and that strategy-wise feels like kind of a roll of the dice, right? Like you're betting on a whole bunch of variables to come together for things to work and not be a total flop. What's your approach to effective guerrilla marketing?
Well, the nature of PR in general and the nature of guerrilla marketing even more is that nothing is ever guaranteed. It's all about a batting average. So I think the secret is to allocate your time and budget so that you can have several swings at bat. And or to mix metaphors, don't try and bet the farm on one stunt. The approach should be kind of dreaming big but iterating small. And something I call in my book the Picasso principle. I mean, it was, and I stress I'm not comparing myself to Picasso or Shakespeare or anything else, but.
Oh, go for it. Don't worry about it.
No. I'm definitely not comparing myself, but I'm trying to learn from them. But Picasso and Shakespeare and Irving Berlin and even Bob Dylan and Dolly Parton, almost anybody you name who we consider a great artistic genius, in fact, the big part of the secret of their success was a sheer volume of output and also lack of fear of failure. Mm-hmm. I mean, Picasso had many great works, and Shakespeare had produced many great plays and sonnets. But actually, if you look at their total work, most of the stuff they produced was dud and failed. And
Bob Dylan in the 80s, Bob Dylan in the 80s is very...
produced lots of work, but, and Irving Berlin produced some fantastic number of songs. I can't remember, 1,500, 2,000, and it's maybe 20 or 30 or 40 that we think of as standard. So, it's all about kind of volume of output and aiming for a batting average. And I guess the longer you do it, the more you do it, the better your batting average. And not being afraid of failing sometimes. but not making it too costly to fail so that you can come back again.
For my last question here, before we got started, you hit upon something that I thought was a really interesting point. And you were talking about how you went from journalism to working into PR. And you were discussing just very briefly about kind of the advantage was you had less of a corporate way of looking at doing PR versus the people who maybe came up naturally through the farm system, to use a baseball analogy, of doing PR. How has that different perspective helped you, and how can it benefit other people in the PR world that are listening right now?
I distinguish in my book between, one of my so-called 10 golden rules of PR marketing. I say there are two kinds of PR, and most startups only do one if they do PR at all, and they need to do both. And one kind of PR is the more direct, kind of product-led, serious, grown-up, which is all about selling the product or service or whatever it is you're promoting. And sometimes in doing that, I think some people who've not come from a journalistic background take a more corporate approach, where they start every press release or pitch with the name of the company, saying company X today announces something that in truth not a lot of people are very interested in. And I suppose if you come up through a journalistic background, you are more trained to understand sometimes what journalists are looking for and how to get their attention, and the advantages of taking a more journalistic approach, which is sometimes is also a more consumer-led, indirect, under-the-radar approach, which involves starting with the question of not what are we selling, but how are we going to get the attention of our target audience? And once we've got their attention, how are we going to then insinuate our product or service or our brand into the story? So, I suppose journalists are trained. Somebody called journalism the creation of interest, and it's the creation of interest and the winning of attention. So that's the essential skill of a journalist, and that's a transferable skill to PR and guerrilla marketing.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Peter. The book is How Calm Whipped Up a Storm. And where should people go to learn more about the book, and where can people go to learn more about what you're up to?
Okay. Well, the book is available on Amazon. It's available in print as a paperback and on Kindle, and planning to turn it into an audiobook in the next few months, but haven't got around to do that. And if they want to learn more about me and what I do, well, they can either look me up on LinkedIn, Peter Friedman, Think Inc., or they can go to my website, which is think-inc.co.uk, which is a creative PR and guerrilla marketing agency. And even though it's based in the UK, as I say, I'm mainly working for clients in the US.
Fantastic. Thank you again, Peter, and excited to maybe speak with you another time down the road.
Great. Thank you very much.
PR 360 was produced by Todd Perry in partnership with Global Results Communications. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave a review wherever you get podcasts. Follow GRC on all socials at Global Results. Follow Todd on Twitter at Todd A. Perry. That's Todd with one D. Talk to you next week.